It's a total joy on Static on 2SER to be able to say a big hi to Hi from London to Neil. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm really good and so relieved that this Hi album is out. I guess you're never too old to make a debut album, huh?
Exactly. It's a wild ride at the minute. I'm just gripping on.
Does it feel not only like a summation of everything Hi up to this point, but also the few musical lives you had before that, Tennille, because you're originally from Sydney and played in bands here and did a lot of that stuff musically before you even moved to London and became Hi. It's been a long journey, hasn't it?
It's been a really long journey. Particularly listening to this album and me kind of reflecting on it, you can really hear, you know, I've made particular nods to my past lives as a shoegazer and as a psychedelic kid. So I feel like it's all compounded itself into one sort of sonic form. So I feel like I've still definitely kept some sort of connection to my old life.
Well, actually, escaping Sydney gave birth to Hi because you had decamped to London in the early 2010s with your band Death Bells, and that didn't pan out. But then your living in East London led you to going out and then DJing in bars, and then that led you to become Hi, right?
Yeah, 100%. I was actually working in this bar called Ridley Road Market Bar, which as a venue is kind of an anomaly, really. It's like, they were really famous for doing these £5 ginger mojitos that everyone flocked there for. And it had two turntables and a crappy old mixer. But it wasn't like a club or anything like that. But it was just like one of those places that people would go and it would just end up being like absolutely chockers like every weekend. And so I started I'd been collecting vinyl for some time and sort of ended up sort of worming my way into becoming the resident DJ there and really kind of like learned. This was back before I knew how to use CDJs or anything like that, and really kind of just like learned on the job basically. And then I started playing there like 6 hours every Friday and Saturday night, and that really sort of shaped the early years of what I didn't realize back then was the sort of beginnings of my career as a touring DJ.
So people would come for the mojitos and then stay for your sets.
Exactly. And stay for more mojitos as well. So.
It must have also been good to learn on the job as a DJ there because it wasn't super trendy or there wasn't a lot of pressure necessarily on you.
There wasn't. And it really, I'm so like sort of retrospectively so grateful for that. And I think the reason that things kind of went the way that they did was because, I mean, there's so many sort of like sliding doors moments as to how like I am where I am now. But essentially, that learning on the job thing and kind of really like being like, hey, I really love this kind of music. There was kind of no ego attached to it. It was really about wanting to share stuff to make people dance and feel something. And I feel like my most sort of formative and important years of starting this career were really about trying to understand what it was that people wanted to dance to, but also within the realms of the kind of music that I found really interesting.
Yeah, and the resultant album sounds like a record made by someone who spent lots of nights out soaking up loads of different styles and genres. There's techno, garage, grime, even some euphoric club soul on this Hi album. And it feels
Absolutely.
In the same way that if a DJ set can be a journey, then so should too an album.
Yeah, 100%. I think with the album, the reason that it ended up sonically the way that it did was because I always felt sort of quite anxious about this. When there's always a real thing around if someone makes an album, it has to be really kind of linear and one track has to complement the next and there's a general tone or there's a general vibe to the whole thing. And I thought, that's not really how I make music. It's not how I DJ. My brain doesn't really work like that. But, you know, I'm quite a hyperactive person. The album itself is really reflective of that in terms of being quite genre bending at times and going from like quite relaxing sounding tracks to some really hard, like 170 BPM kind of breakbeat stuff. So I felt like rather than trying to stick to a formula with it, I just thought it was really important to kind of honour how I creatively process stuff. And the album is really speaks for itself in that way, I guess.
It also starts with what sounds like a tape being inserted into a car stereo system. Like the album is a mixtape getting ready to play, and even the second half of the record starts with the radio getting tuned in, like you're ready to stream a mix. So it gives you a few clues as to there is going to be a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that whole starting with the cassette turning on thing, I like vividly remember wanting to do that and us recording that in the Mute Studios and like It just kind of really made sense to the whole, you know, listening to music. And I guess the idea of that and the radio station, and in fact, even just the first track, which is called Channels, is like a hyperactive kind of thing, like flicking through different stations constantly, just trying to find the track that you want to hear, and became a bit of the ambition of the album 3/4 of the way through, I guess.
Tennille, you say you were recording that sound of the tape going into the car stereo in the Mute Studios. Does that mean you backed a car up? Or is it authentic?
No, it was in a boombox. I bought an old boombox halfway through recording the album. We mic'd it up and did this. It was quite funny. We did this, put some contact mics around the room and just like recorded me like walking into the studio and then like opening up the tape deck. It just felt so ridiculous at the time, but I knew that it would make sense to the sound of the beginning of the album.
And Tennille, all the collaborations on the High album feel like they've come from an organic place too. They're all mates first, these people that have ended up on your record. It's not like you parachuted some big name rando American rappers into the High record. I mean, John Hopkins is a close friend and has been a champion of you, so he was an obvious choice to have on there.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone that collaborated in any kind of way was definitely someone that I was quite close to. So John and I have been friends for a long time. We've toured together. We've been sort of admirers of each other's music. You know, we spend a great deal of time together just kind of hanging out. And it was just one of those things that, like, with every single person, it was something that just happened so kind of naturally. And I can't imagine, you know, I think when it comes to making an album and something that's so personal, the only way that I could really do it was by doing it with people that I was close to.
And also people you knew would text you back. It must be so awkward for some artists when they don't know someone and ask them to be part of their record and then never hear back from them.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel it's really important, especially in these kind of situations and with someone like John, it's really important to sort of detach yourself from, you know, the size of an artist that you're working with and just be like, hey, we're people that do the same job. I'm extremely grateful that I got to do it with someone like him. But at the same time, it essentially was like me getting to make music with one of my best buddies.
Well, others on the record were even closer, literally. You got spoken word poet and trans visibility activist Kai Isaiah Jamal, and they lived in the same building as you, so they couldn't avoid you when you asked.
Yeah, I know. That was another thing. Kai, I had written this track for Kai because we had become pals and I was a big fan of their work and their activism and their poetry and just them as a human being. And I had really wanted to do something with Kai, and in the background I'd been sort of working on this track, which would become Human Sound, but I didn't really have the courage to ask them for a collaboration. And then the more that we were talking, the more that we were sort of relating about kind of music and music history and techno history and the queer and black roots of the kind of music that we both love. And then Kai sort of reached out one day and was like, we should try and make some music together. And I was like, well, actually, I have been like making this track that I hope that you'd be a part of. And it was such a like a beautiful moment. We were like so excited. So yeah, and I feel really, really grateful to have Kai have been a part of the whole album process.
And Tennille, Kai's appearance feels so vital too. It's one thing to have singers on the album, but having someone eloquently narrate a rapid-fire story that begins with Absolutely. Speaking of the beauty of music is such a powerful thing on this album.
Oh, 100%. I personally feel like they're a real, especially in the part of the world that I live in, I feel like they're a real kind of voice of the generation at the minute. And being in the studio with Kai when we were recording them was just like such, I mean, it happened in like 2 takes because they're an absolute pro. And it really is something that when Kai is doing spoken word, it is something that comes so naturally and comes from the gut. And like, it was just such an incredible, I was just absolutely speechless, ironically, because I just feel lyrically it's just so personal, but quite powerful as well.
And Tennille, how nerve-wracking was it to add your own voice to the High record on songs like the title
Extremely.
Track? You know, I can't hear an Aussie accent in there, I've got to say.
Oh, so many people are saying this, it's really bugging me. I feel like when I was back touring in Australia recently, everyone's like, oh, you've really lost your accent. I actually blame the pandemic on that because my girlfriend is British and we were locked in the house for 2 years. So
maybe, you were locked in the house watching EastEnders or something, were you?
Exactly. Although I was watching Ambulance Australia quite a lot, so I thought I would have. But having my own voice on the album was a real, like, it took a lot of encouragement from Daniel Miller, actually. And I feel like it really changed the path that the album was headed towards. And I'm so grateful. I mean, getting some confidence to sing on something from someone like Daniel Miller is a real gift to be treasured. I think had it not been for them encouraging that, I don't know if I would be like putting this live show together or if it would be sort of as performative as it is. And so I feel really grateful for it.
Well, I'm glad the whole thing has played out, Tenniel, and it's been so great to talk to you about this High album. We might have a listen to the one that's got the voice of an angel on the record. We'll play Biggest Mood Ever with Alexis. This sounds incredible. It was so good to talk to you. I know you'll be back here at some point touring.
I will be back at the end of the year. I think there's already been one festival announcement, but there will be many.
Awesome. It was great to talk through this record with you. You have some fun over summer on the road touring the High album. And this is Biggest Mood Ever now on Static. Thanks, Tenniel.
Thank you so much. Catch you next time.